The Institute of Marriage and Family Canada does some interesting work, and we regularly get their authors and their experts to join us on the show. Today, they released a new report called Finding Fault with No Fault Divorce. Here's what's happened. A municipal counselor in Mexico City proposed temporary marriage licenses. Imagine the reaction there. It's not like a fishing license. Marriage licenses are meant to be permanent. They're not. They should not have an expiration date, my opinion. But the no-fault system in Canada, is it any better? Is it working? Is it helping? Is it no-fault divorce in Canada just means it's really easy to get divorced. That's my perspective, and keep in mind I've been married a lot longer than most of you. Andrea Mrozek joins the conversation, the Manager of Research and Communications at the Institute of Marriage and Family Canada. How are you?
I am also sick of being sick, but otherwise doing okay.
It's ridiculous, isn't it?
Yeah, no, I agreed with that comment. I'm having the same problem, so.
Yeah, well, misery loves company. Maybe I called you for the right reason today, then.
Yeah, exactly.
How has our no-fault system affected marriage?
Well, in this paper, we identify that it has certainly affected marriage in a couple of ways. First, it has indeed made it easier to divorce. So we saw an increase in the divorce rate with the move to no-fault divorce. It has also changed the manner in which we consider marriage, moving from what they call in the past a vision of marriage that was more less like a legal contract, more like a community act or a covenant, a bigger promise. And then when we moved to no-fault divorce, marriage moved into the realm of a legal contract, the sort of thing that you can sign on the dotted line and then when it's over, you can sign out. Some have said in the realm of marriage research that it's easier to get out of a marriage than it is to terminate an employee. So that gives you a sense of what we've done with marriage when we move to no-fault divorce. Another thing we itemize in the report is that when we move to no-fault divorce, an outcome was increased poverty. And so this is a correlation, not a causation, but with marital breakdown, we see an increase in poverty, particularly in female lone parent poverty. So that's been an outcome that we don't often talk about. And of course, then there are all the outcomes for children who are forced to experience their parents' divorce. So those are a couple of the things that the paper discusses that were the outcomes of moving to no-fault divorce that we didn't really think about when we, along with the rest of the Western world, moved to a more free system of divorce.
So what should have happened then, Andrea? Should it be harder to get married than it is to get divorced? Should it be more like a lot of business contracts? Should it be more top-loaded?
Well, I at the time that they moved to no-fault divorce, I think that these outcomes were unseen. Perhaps not entirely unexpected, but they certainly were not seen. And there were good reasons to move to no-fault divorce. So, for example, making it easier for, in an abusive situation, making it easier for that sort of marriage to end, that would have been one of the positive intents. What they should have done, I think, is taken a better look at what the real problems were, if there were real problems getting out of troubling high-conflict marriages that could have addressed that. What we saw and what I itemized in the paper is that this is not a simplistic issue. We've seen a change in our culture. We look for more autonomy. We're less interested in community. Individualism has been on the rise. To a degree, feminism also asked for this easy out of marriage, which is ironic since it has harmed women with that rise of female lone parent poverty. What should have happened was a deeper examination, and what should happen today is a greater awareness of some of the drawbacks of divorce so that people aren't going into marital conflict with a false understanding of, first of all, the ways in which they could resolve the conflicts in their marriage that might leave them happier at the end rather than turning to divorce too quickly.
So what you're saying is divorce too often is the first option?
I wouldn't say that it's the first option for anybody, but I would say that we live in a culture where we have taken government resources, we have lawyers devoted to the concept of an easier divorce, or a better divorce for kids. And at this point, it's time to turn our attention towards strengthening marriage instead of making divorce something that goes more smoothly, particularly since the vast majority of divorces in Canada are the result of low-conflict marriages, which the research shows if they were worked on 5 years down the road, those people might be happier. And divorce does not, in fact, lead to greater happiness, which is generally what people are looking for, and rightfully so, who can blame them when they are in a bad marriage?
So what we lack then is conflict resolution skills.
To a degree, yes, and also that long-term vision. 5 years when you're in a bad marriage, I think that would sound like a lifetime, but in effect, it's not. And so to have a long-term view, to have marriage mentors come along somebody, we don't have a real strong community structure, and marriages do need outside input and people to strengthen, to help, to act as mentors. I think that's one of the suggestions we have in the paper, that could we develop those marriage mentoring networks so that people aren't struggling alone. There is, I think, something to be said for the fact that if everybody got divorced for some of the reasons that we see people getting divorced today, we might have a close to 100% divorce rate. So some people do manage to pull through conflict zones in their marriage, and would there be the capacity to capitalize off of that and help other people as they enter into the inevitable conflict zone?
Now, a few years ago, I remember doing a piece on no-fault divorce, and I had a divorce attorney in who started reading me, because you had to put something apparently on the certificate, your reason for wanting a divorce, and reasons were coming up like, he won't take the garbage out. So that's all, it had, you could put anything down, like watches too much TV, became an excuse, not an excuse, a reason for wanting to dissolve a marriage. To me, that's way, way too simplistic.
Yeah, and I'm sure those people were putting that down, and it was really just a hodgepodge. It was a huge, there was bigger problems, and they needed to put one thing down. I mean, I can't imagine taking the garbage out being the real reason for a marital demise. But you can see how these things add up, and people are trapped in their own lives, their own homes. They feel like they're completely alone. They may feel like there has never been anybody else to experience something as terrible as what they're experiencing right now. And I think to shed some light on the fact that marital problems are very commonplace might even help them, and that the end result of that type of situation need not be divorce and moving out, or moving out then preceding the divorce. Since in the no-fault regime that we have right now, anybody can get divorced for any reason. That's why those certificates had some pretty funny reasons on them, I guess. But no-fault divorce means just living apart for 1 year, and then the divorce follows. So, I mean, from the Institute of Marriage and Family Canada standpoint, we're grateful that at least there's the one-year waiting period. But at the same time, a one-year waiting period without the additional supports, help, mentoring, counseling, these sorts of things, that doesn't do anything to help rectify the situation.
Gotcha. Andrea, always good to chat. Thanks for this today.
Thank you very much.
I hope you get better.
You too.
Bye-bye. Andrea Mrozek is the Manager of Research and Communications with the Institute of Marriage and Family Canada.